An excerpt from the memories of Reverend Richard Norsworthy, then minister at the Universalist Church of North Weymouth, who traveled to Selma with more than 100 other UU ministers in response to the call from Dr. King. At the point where Sunday's hostilities occurred, a cordon of troopers were drawn up across the highway. But we were there. They didn't charge the marchers this time. We knelt, prayed, and sang. The troopers withdrew. We turned around and marched back to the church. We had won a small victory, but big oaks from little acorns do grow.
We want to start with Selma today. Hundreds of our Unitarian Universalist people are once again in Selma this weekend, joining thousands who are marking the 50th anniversary of the infamous events of Bloody Sunday and the famed civil rights marches that followed. They are there as a reminder to themselves and to all of us, and as a recommitment to the work of racial equality. So we take time to remember this morning the life of Jimmie Lee Jackson, whose death was the impetus for the timing, at least, of the marches, and to remember James Reeb and Viola Liuzzo, two Unitarian Universalists who lost their lives during that weekend in 1965. We have been invited by five of our Unitarian Universalist sisters of color to make of this time a Sankofa moment, an opportunity to look back and learn from our past, to be reignited and recommitted to the work of eradicating the racism that continues to plague our country.
Selma is a continuing story of Unitarian Universalists answering when called, playing a supporting role in a nonviolent yet powerful and unapologetic agitation for justice. Viola Liuzzo and James Reeb not only sacrificed their lives to the Black Civil Rights Movement, they and the other Unitarian Universalists who committed themselves to the movement are examples of how to respond to the call for justice, how to show up faithfully, how to live UU faith and values, and most importantly, how to follow the leadership of communities of color confronting injustice. Tekina Boston, Reverend Alicia Ford, Dr. Janice Marie Johnson, Elizabeth Ann Terry, and Jessica York.
So in my getting ready for this sermon, Nancy and I had talked about the idea of doing a service on prayer. And Selma Sunday fell on this date as well, so it seemed coincident to join the two. And I went back to the Selma years and read transcripts of events, of the marches, the meetings, the strategy sessions. And I kept seeing, as we just heard from Dick Norsworthy, we prayed. In this time of enormous struggle and unrest, of effort to find a better way, a more equitable and a whole way of being, they prayed. They were lost, as we all can be, in a blizzard, if you will, a blizzard of anger and bigotry, a swirling pattern of racism and hate. So they gathered and they organized and they marched and they prayed. It occurred to me that we know something of blizzards these days, right? Literal blizzards. I'm not sure if any of you strung a rope from your back door to anywhere during the past month or so, your car, your neighbor's house, Theodore Parker Church. But we have felt lost in it. More snow days than we care to remember, more canceled this, that, and the other thing, water in our windows, down our walls, in our ceilings. How many of us prayed?
What keeps you from prayer? ask that question in a room full of people who don't pray, and you get a raft of answers. Oh, I'm too busy. Uncomfortable. All the people I know are real jerks. All the people I know who pray are real jerks. Or I have bad memories of abusive figures. I don't know who to pray to. I don't know what to say. Here and there, one comes across a true rarity, a person who is wholly neutral when it comes to prayer. But most people have strong opinions, at least about when, how, and to whom we would rather not pray. Words of a religion we don't subscribe to, or to a God we don't believe in. So we don't pray at all. Unitarian Universalist minister, the Reverend Kate Braestrup in Beginner's Grace.
Way back in the 60s, that 50-year-ago era, that time we're recollecting this morning in our Sankofa moments, our traditions merged, Unitarianism and Universalism. And we began an evolution of becoming something new, something that we are still engaged with today. We are a liberal faith tradition that some have described as being in adolescence. We've had 50 years of exploration, experimentation, self-discovery, and challenge in how to be a useful and relevant environment of faith, both for those who have been in this tradition or either of those traditions for years, dating before the merger, and for the far larger number of those who have come in. We have eschewed dogma, thrown creed to the curb, and put our energy into the work of justice and equity. We took down our crosses, like the one that I saw in a photo that used to be where the quilt is now. We discovered new words for big concepts like spirit of life and the interdependent web of existence. And we discovered practices loosely borrowed from other traditions like meditation, many of which allowed us to sidestep our questions or discomforts with traditional language, like prayer, for example. I mention this as both a concern or a more hopefully an opportunity for us as individuals who, of course, have the freedom to determine our own paths, as much as for our collective practice. Whatever comfort or discomfort is experienced in this congregation around the idea of collective prayer is reflected in other Unitarian Universalist congregations as well, I can assure you. Sometimes our tradition has felt to me like a blizzard with no rope. We are wandering around grasping for something solid, yet leery of anything that reminds us of the traditions from which we came. I don't know who to pray to. I don't know what to say, Kate Braestrup reminded us. Better to avoid it altogether. But in this moment, this morning, I'm hoping we might find a way to look back and recognize what has been of value to so many for so long. And more, that we might find a way to sit in comfort with a prayer practice, or at least not to sit in discomfort with it.
Being a chaplain has forced me to unlearn everything I thought about prayer. And I keep unlearning, because people's relationships with prayer are so varied and prayer's potential so open. For example, I used to just draw a line between prayer and meditation. Not anymore. Engaged with both, I see they overlap and perhaps are just different forms of the same impulse. I want to keep an open mind to prayer. I hope that we will as a congregation. We can confuse prayer with the form it takes, childhood uses and abuses, public uses and abuses, and discredit its potential given its alliance with belief systems that differ from ours. Is prayer dear to your heart? Has it somehow worked for you? Is it taboo to your reason and judgment, or perhaps something you're actually ashamed to engage in? Different parts of me think all of those things about prayer. Still, in spite of this inner conflict, I see that prayer can bring peace, integration, depth of feeling of all kinds, wisdom, inner clarity, and clarity also about outer realities, honesty, a sense of union with ultimate being, however we see that, and wholeness. I've learned this by asking people what their tears are about when they pray, which often happens when I'm with them. Also seeing resolution and change after prayer, and I felt it myself. But only when I open to the moment and let go my preconceptions.
I wonder if any of you are familiar with this story about the religious man on a rooftop during a flood. He's busy praying for a miracle when a man comes by in a boat and says, get in, I'll help you. And the religious man says, oh no, I prayed. I prayed for a miracle, no doubt one will come my way. Later, the water is up to his waist. And another boat comes by, another man said, get in, I'll help you. Oh no, I have faith in my prayer. I feel sure a miracle will come. The water about chest high, another boat comes by to rescue him. He turns down the offer again in deference to his prayer. With the water at chin level, a helicopter throws down a ladder and they tell him to get on the ladder. I'm okay. Not surprisingly, he arrives at heaven. St. Peter meets him at the gates. I prayed hard. I thought for sure God would grant me a miracle, and I've been let down. And St. Peter looks at him and laughs. We sent 3 boats and a helicopter. What were you waiting for? Often I have found that in the liberal religious path, humility is not a strong suit. People might have thought that about Martin Luther as well, not Martin Luther King Jr., but the original Martin Luther, who posted in 1517, as the story goes, his 95 theses attacking the Catholic Church and sparking the Protestant Reformation. Challenges to the status quo are not for the faint of heart. It takes strength of belief and a commitment to the discovery of truth to speak out, particularly in religious arenas. Our questioning, our challenging tradition, has taken a lot of chutzpah and no small amount of imagination. Our own Theodore Parker is testament to that reality. So in our rooftop caper, our Unitarian Universalist sensitivities would likely have had the religious man recognizing that if he was to be saved, he better get busy being a part of the saving himself. Get in the boat and count your lucky stars. Don't mess with miracles. But the prayer itself may have been his recognition. I'm in trouble. I don't have the resources to get myself out of this alone. I'm in a blizzard, and I need a rope. I'm in a flood, and I need a boat. We are in a flood, all of us in life. There's humility in that prayer. We Unitarian Universalists may have moved beyond the expectation of miracles, But I wonder sometimes if we haven't lost the simple skill set of the humble path in the process. Because if nothing else, prayer is a reminder of humble. Sometimes the reality is that by myself I am not enough. And until I'm willing to craft that thought and offer it up or out or over or whatever direction, it's easy for me to avoid it. Sometimes the reality is that among ourselves, we are not enough either, and our prayer can be that recognition. Crafted to whom or for what or on what timeline has less significance next to the simple act of the inner conversation or the intention of listening to our needs that is a prayer. As much as we Unitarian Universalists recognize that we are the holy work on this earth, that we are the hands, the creators of whatever heaven is available to us, whatever kingdom of beloved community we are trying to establish right here in this life, first, there must be times when we are willing to acknowledge not only our human limitations, but our human contributions to the storm we all live in all the time. Our prayer can be that recognition. I was watching the events and speeches at the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma yesterday on television. If you didn't have a chance to see President Obama's speech, it's worth looking up and watching. He reminded us that despite progress, we have by no means finished confronting racism, that particular storm that is racism. A challenge for all of us and for each of us. Prior to his speaking, a woman named Elizabeth Omalami offered words. She is the daughter of Hosea Williams, who marched on Bloody Sunday. As she spoke, I was reminded of the courage of everyone who worked on that movement, everyone who showed up and linked arms and walked forward. Given what they were facing, prayer must have seemed like the place of first resort. A reservoir for courage and strength, a rope guiding them back to what mattered about their goals and how they approached them. Elizabeth reminded the crowd yesterday that we each have our own Edmund Pettus bridge to cross, our own challenge of courage and commitment. I wonder sometimes if prayer might be one of ours. Let us be bold and strong together, and let us be humble enough to acknowledge our limits, our lost moments, our wandering in the soul's backyard. May prayer be a resource, a comfort, a guide, so that together we can regain our bearings and direct our passions toward healing our world. How about an amen for that?
Amen.
Excellent.